the first slide. It's the first item on our agenda is a welcome. And since this is our first meeting together, I think it's a good idea just to quickly do short introductions. I know I met some of you in Puerto Rico, but some of you I have not met. As I said, my name is Jennifer Bryson. I'm a senior reviews coordinator with the MSSI department at ICANN. I will be helping coordinate this review along with my colleagues, Angie and Lars, who are both on the call. I would like to ask everybody if they could just quickly introduce themselves. I know we have some other policy support colleagues on here too, Bart, Yoka, and Kim. So if everybody wouldn't mind doing a quick tour de table, maybe we can start with Kim. I see you first on my list of the participants.
Thanks, Jennifer. Kim Carlson, I work for the CCNSO Secretariat, and you get all those crazy emails from me. So if you have any questions or comments, just let me know.
Bart Boswinkle, also CCNSO Secretariat, and I do send crazy emails. And welcome. I know most of you, and it's very nice to have some people on the call who haven't been involved in the CCNSO for quite some time, but do have some experience in there. So welcome.
Steven,
next. CCNSO.
This is Lars Hoffman. I'm with the ICANN organization. I work for the MSSI department with Jennifer and Angie, and we're supporting this review and talk about our roles and facts in greater detail later during the presentation. Thank you.
And this is Angie Graves. Thank you.
Okay. Anybody we missed who would like to introduce themselves?
And some people introduce themselves in the chat room as well. But if you could speak up so people can hear your voice as well, it's always very nice, isn't it?
Thank you. I see Hong in the chat. He says, says hello. Yelena and I think we've got everybody. All right. So let's get started then. Angie, if you can move to the next slide, please. Okay, roles and responsibilities. Again, I think some of you all have seen this slide in Puerto Rico, but let's quickly look at this. As you know, you are the review working party, so thank you very much for volunteering to help us out with this review. As you can see, we've bolded the sections that we are on at this point in time with the review. So conduct self-assessment, which you all have already very efficiently done. So thank you for that. The bolded bullet, the second bullet down, input into review scope and IE selection criteria. So this is the call today. At least we hope to get some of your initial input from the document that we circulated to the list last week. After we have your input, it will go to the OEC, who will also share any input that they have and approve the scope, as it were. Of course, throughout the review working party is there to input and keep the independent examiner right, as it were. So we have our mailing list set up, we'll have regular calls. There's various opportunities throughout the review to input to the content that the independent examiner has put together in various reports, which we will explain a little bit further in detail later on in this call. But the role of the review working party is basically to provide factual corrections and guidance throughout the review process. Before, I'm just trying to I can't really see this slide properly, but I've got a big box there. So, independent examiner, of course, will come on board in August once the review gets started. Their role is pretty straightforward. They will be executing the work that we just decide on in the scope, and preparing reports, developing surveys, interviews, etc. Throughout the review process. The OEC, as I mentioned, is there to provide oversight, and they will, at this point in time, the thing that we need to keep in mind is that they will approve the scope of the review. They will also confirm the selection of the independent examiner as well, and monitor progress of implementation once we get to that stage. ICANORG, MSSI support, and with the help of our policy colleagues, will be here to help facilitate the review process. At the moment, we're preparing the RFP, and MSSI will run the bidding process and select the independent examiner in accordance with the criteria that we come up with. Does anybody have any questions on this slide, the roles and responsibilities, before we move on to the next slide? And I see Kim said, as a reminder, this call is being recorded. So thank you, Kimberly, for reminding me to say that. Okay. With that, then move on. Angie, if you could progress the slide deck, please. Thank you. Okay, so at the moment, where we are in the RFP process is developing the scope and selection criteria, obviously. We hope to publish the RFP in late April. This process that you're seeing on the slide here is a procurement process. It's not MSSI's process. We just follow the process that procurement already has in place. Of course, the review working party will be kept informed throughout the process where appropriate. We have highlighted the boxes here where the RWP, the review working party, has key involvement. So that's two stages, the beginning and the end. Obviously the input to the scope, and then at the after the independent examiner is contracted, we'll have a kickoff meeting, which hopefully will be August or perhaps early September. The stages in the middle, it's MSSI and procurement, and then of course, as I mentioned, with some input from the OEC to confirm the selected candidate. I see Bart, you have your hand raised.
Yeah, just a question for you, and maybe of interest to the working party, is does this imply, say, that the working party will be involved in the process until later April, until, say, the scope document has been finalized, and then it will be re-engaged sometime early August? So there will be no interaction in between late April and early August.
So there will be interaction. The process itself, the review working party, and any of my colleagues can feel free to jump in if I'm incorrect here, but the process itself, the review working party does not get involved in. So anything that's not got the big bold box around it, we will be providing status updates, and of course are available anytime to answer questions about any of those updates that we provide. But in terms of involvement in the process, the review working party does not have a role outside of this input to the selection criteria and the scope.
The reason for asking, so that people on the call and on the working party know, say, up till the end of August, there's no time involved, etc. So as long as they know, that's why I'm asking.
Yeah, and thank you for setting that out, and it's important. And we'll when we get to the review timeline, we'll cover a little bit more the times at which the review working party will be very heavily involved, and at the moment, yeah, I think it's very right to point out that between now and August, you can relax a little bit. I can hear some echo. Okay, that's better. All right. Does anybody else have any other questions on this process before we move on? Okay. Angie, the next slide, please. Great. And if you could pull up the scope document that we circulated to the list. I'm going to pass over at this point to my colleague, Lark, who will give you a bit of a walkthrough of this document, and hopefully we'll get some inputs from you all here.
Thank you, Jennifer. Yeah, this is Ian. Sorry, I'm pulling the scope up, and give me 30 seconds or so. Thank you.
No problem at all. Angie, while you do that, I'd just like to let everybody know, I don't know if you saw this already, I saw on the list this morning, we had a note, I think, from Debbie, if I recall that correctly, making a couple of comments on the scope. Kim, in fact, forwarded that message from her, and I'll talk about the point she raises a little bit as well. Because I think some of them are quite important or warranted, and warranted rather. So we have the selection criteria and the scope itself. So the scope is obviously the area that is covered by this review. As Jennifer pointed out, we are seeking your input. We want to make sure that you, the CCNSO working party, and in fact the CCNSO as a whole that you represent, understands A, what the scope is, and agrees that it is set in a way that will make, on the one hand side, for an effective and efficient organizational review, and obviously on the other hand, make sure that it is within the realm of the parameters set by the ICANN bylaws, which are governing these organizational reviews. Angie, if you can scroll down a little bit, section 4.4 of the bylaws is really what is the key issue here. There we go. Thank you so much, Angie. There's a summary here. We inserted CCNSO. The wording is slightly different because obviously it pertains to all SOACs, and so we personalized it for the CCNSO, but the rest of the wording is verbatim, word for word, taken from the ICANN bylaws. So it's an assessment of whether the CCNSO has a continuing purpose within the ICANN structure, an assessment of how effectively the CCNSO fulfills its purpose, and whether any changes to the CCNSO structure operations is desirable to improve the CCNSO's effectiveness, and also an assessment of the extent to which the CCNSO as a whole is accountable to its own organizations, committees, constituencies, and stakeholder groups. And if you say, well, we don't have any constituencies or we don't have any stakeholder groups, that's language taken from the bylaws. And so and that's obviously something that the independent examiner and the review itself will adapt to whatever structure is under review and is present here. And so here, for the CCNSO, it will be done obviously in accordance with the way that the CCNSO is structured. So those three points are essentially, to put it diplomatically, a non-negotiable, simply because that's the wording of the bylaws, as I said. What we proposed here is in the next section is a set of questions to kind of define the scope a little bit more detailed, and if you want, tailored to the CCNSO. I'm not going to read through all these questions. I hope you've done that before the call. If you have not, I would like to encourage you strongly to make sure that you read through these questions, that you make sure these are adequate and you find them useful. If you think there could be more details, or there's even too many details, it would be good if you shared that opinion either on this call, or obviously you can do that on list later on. You see this, we have grouped this into, I believe, four sections for my purpose here: the accountability and transparency. Angie, if you can get down a little bit further to C and D. There you go, the operations and membership processes, communications, or it even goes on beyond that, and the deviation of measurements and outcomes. And this is the effectiveness of the prior review, so the first CCNSO review, the effectiveness of the recommendations. So this all is kind of an elaboration of those three initial sets of criteria as laid out in the bylaws. To give you an information what happens with the scope, so it's not just something, the scope will be published as part of the procurement process to find an independent examiner, so they know what the job is they're supposed to be doing, anybody who applies to be the independent examiner. And then this is also the contractual basis between the eventual independent examiner and ICANN. So it is clear that this is the only work they will be contracted to do, and nothing less, but crucially also, and nothing more than is what is said here. And I think this is a quite important point from a procedural perspective. You as the working party are obviously the experts considering the CCNSO. And so if at any point during the review, be it doing any discussions with the independent examiners, be it during the development of interview questions or survey questions where you will be providing feedback, or when any draft reports are put out, and you have a sentiment that the independent examiner falls short of accomplishing the scope, or in fact they go beyond the parameters laid out in the scope document, it is really for you to raise that and to be a little bit of the guardians of the scope once the review starts. Obviously, from the organizational side, from the ICANN org side, we will be doing the same. But you understand that, as I said, you are the experts, and we will do our best, but we rely on you to really make sure that the review stays within these set parameters and doesn't fall short and doesn't go beyond that either. And that's also why many of the documents that eventually produce, and I think Jennifer will talk about that a little bit later, are shared with you first. They're not made public straight away. You get always a first look at these documents to make sure that anything that is put out to the wider community is in fact appropriate and within the agreed scope of the review. Any questions on this? Otherwise, I will briefly talk about the selection criteria. Oh, actually, no. I will talk about the exceptions first.
Lars, we have a raised hand from Katrina.
Katrina, go ahead, please.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much, Lars. Thanks for this intro. And I have a couple of comments on the document, but probably I won't go through all of them. We'll submit it later as questions or something. But one question I do have, it's about this effectiveness. How is it measured, and how, maybe you can share from your experience from previous or other reviews. So what is considered effective, and what is considered not effective? Because if you want to propose some improvements to effectiveness, you have to measure effectiveness first. So how is it done?
There are words in this document that are definitely on the scale of subjectivity as opposed to objectivity, and I think that might be what you're speaking to, Katrina.
Well, yes. Well, in any case, it's either there are any objective criteria, or it's purely subjective, and then again we can argue. It's really like very interesting to see, because at first it has to be measured somehow.
Right, and this is in the bylaws, so they thoughtfully considered the word prior to putting it in here, and the application of that with respect to organizational reviews is actually recording what the subjective opinions are. If we saw a fluffy bunny, I think everybody could subjectively agree that it's a cute little fluffy bunny. The community will be polled via interviews and surveys to give their impressions. And members of the CCNSO will be polled to give their impressions via interviews and surveys and other contacts with the community. Through that, over time, during an analysis, an impression appears. It comes about through collective assessment of the different opinions. So we could say, are you effective? It is a subjective question, but if you ask 60 people in a survey and another 40 in an interview, then an impression emerges. Does that answer your question?
Not so sure about that, because, is it just, effectiveness of the CCNSO of itself, or effectiveness of CCNSO comparing to something else? Because, for example, if we're compared to ICANN, I think we're extremely efficient and effective. But if you compare with some other SOACs, maybe we're not efficient. So is this just, CCNSO taken separately, or looking in a greater context or whatever?
Yeah, this is looking at CCNSO within the context of ICANN and its relationships with stakeholder or with its own stakeholders, with the community, based on the charter, what the CCNSO is described to, the mission described in the bylaws. So it maps back to the bylaws. Everything in the review does map back to the bylaws, if that makes any sense.
And thank you for that, Angie. If I can just add to that, when you said absolutely right, obviously it maps it, everything ought to or has to map back to the bylaws. And Katrina, I think from past experience with other reviews, what we generally found in practical terms, in terms of how is effectiveness in fact interpreted and applied or assessed, if you want. And the independent examiner will look at, as you say, A, internal proceedings and procedures of the CCNSO. How does the CCNSO work? How a decision reached, how is it structured, et cetera. Similarly, obviously, how does the CCNSO fit into the wider ICANN structure? And does it, what role does it play within the ICANN structures? And how is that role performed? And so the independent examiner usually looks, and it's probably easiest to look at F here, where the effectiveness is mentioned as well, to prior reviews as a concrete example. So I think the question the examiner asks is, first of all, what is the goal or what is the purpose of any rule or any structural components or architecture? What is the goal of the CCNSO itself, and why are things put in place the way they are? What is the purpose of or the functioning of the processes and of the structures in place? And then I think the follow-up question is the way it is structured or the way the processes take place, do they A, fulfill the purpose that they're set out for? And then B, can those goals and purposes be reached maybe more quickly, in a better way, or more thoroughly? And if so, then they would propose a way how to do that. So it's not so much for them to say, the CCNSO is really ineffective. This is nothing we've ever heard about anybody come out of review, and I think that would be very counterproductive. And the goal is really to say, what role does the CCNSO play? And is there any, and what, as I said, what structures are in place, procedures, And are there any mechanisms that could improve, if you want, the effectiveness or the efficiency that already exists? And that may, the answer may be in some cases, or in most cases, in fact, at least from our past experience, no, the, you know, the processes have developed a long period of time. They work well. It's obviously a complicated structure. You know, the CCSO, as any of the other SOACs, is not a particularly simple a particularly simple structure. And so making improvements or making efficiency gains or effectiveness gains might not be easy, in fact, not even possible. And so it's always kind of looking at what should be achieved and could we achieve it in a better way. And that's where the independent examiner comes in, right? As Angie rightly says, it's obviously going to be a subjective assessment thereof. They might think that you do a certain process, I apologize, not as effectively as you could do. But you then, as the CCNSO working party, say, well, you're right, it's very cumbersome. However, here are the three reasons why it has to be cumbersome and why we have to do it this way. And so while it is maybe not the most effective way to go about things, we are part of this larger structure, and effectiveness improvements can't really be made here. I hope that was helpful.
This is Angie. Just one more quick footnote to build on what Lars said. This is why we choose, and this is why an independent examiner does this work. This is what they do. There are organizations that analyze and assess. They're outside of the ICANA community, and they're professionals who do this across a lot of different organizations in the course of their work over years. So when they're contracted to ICANN, they maintain their independence. They are learning from you and from the community about the organization. And I think that's why it's essential that we have both an independent examiner and an examiner that is professional, does this for a living.
All right, Katrina, unless you have another follow-up, I hope we addressed it as best as we can, or as best as to help you a little bit.
Well, yeah, thank you very much. Thank you very much for your efforts. Not sure they were very effective, but it's quite clear. Yeah. Okay, thank you. Let's move forward.
Thanks. The next section here is, Angie, if you can go a little bit further, I just can see the first. I'd like to see both of them if possible. Oh, it's over two pages. That's fine. There's two exclusions to the review, which is first the financial contributions of members of the CCTOV to ICANN. There's a rationale for that. So this basically means that this is an area that falls without the scope of the review. The independent examiner will not assess or address these issues and will not issue any recommendations, obviously, for this aspect or for this criteria. And the second is the quality and outcome, if you want, of the CCSO's policy development process, the PDP. So basically, as we said, the review is about examining processes and structures, not about content, whether the CCSO, produces policies or any other advice or takes votes or participates in any reviews, and what the content of that is, it's not part of the review, right? This is up to the CCSO what they want to do and how they want to do it, and whatever the outcome is. It's for the CCSO to say whether they approve of it or not. In fact, that's what you do through voting, etc. And what will be part, however, is the decision-making processes of how you get there and whether those can be made more effective or efficient, whether those could be improved in any way. We understand that the there's some red lines appearing on the document. I'm not sure what that is, but in either way, in any case, the Angie, if you could get down a little bit so I can see number two, we understand that the PDP process can only be changed through a PDP itself, and obviously this review does not circumvent that. So if there were a situation where the independent examiner says the PDP could be improved this way or that way, and at the very end the board would agree with that, then that would obviously still require a full PDP of the CC&SO to change or to attempt to change the structure, with the understanding that the outcome of the PDP cannot be predicted and the PDP cannot be bound. So that is something that obviously is in the bylaws, it's in the CC&SO procedures as well, and that cannot be negated by this review. So I hope that makes sense. If anybody's got a question, I'd just like to actually ask you a question, if I may, based on Debbie's email. She noted that, and I'm going to just read this out quickly for those who haven't maybe seen the email. She said, "I realize why financial contributions aren't part of the review and agree with the statement made about it. I'm just wondering if there could be a way of any comments made about this by people being spoken to could somehow be recorded and perhaps passed on to the CC&SO team that will be looking at this later in the year." So from our perspective, obviously, there is no issue with what Debbie suggests in principle, saying if anything on financial contribution comes up, the independent examiner could pass that on to the CC&SO team. The only caveat being is that with this being an official exclusion from the scope, our expectations would be that the independent examiner doesn't touch the subject at all. And so unless there would be unsolicited comments made during interviews, we would be very discouraging of the independent examiner to actually ask questions. And so this might not be, there's no issue with this, but I'm not entirely sure that this, anything about this will actually come up simply because the independent examiner will not be asking about this. Does that make sense? Are there any additional questions about that?
Bart has his hand raised.
Oh, please go ahead.
Lars, so what might be useful, and I think this would cover Debbie's not so much concern but suggestion, that if something comes up in the work of the review which is should be considered out of scope, it doesn't prevent them from reporting either directly to the CC&SO itself or to somebody else. So include it somewhere, but they should be not actively seeking for input in this area, but they can't avoid that they hear it, and that would be a waste if they not use what they hear and what is outside of scope and report back on it even directly to the CC&SO.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Absolutely, but there's no objection that you're quite right. That would be a waste.
And so include this somewhere in the language or in the text as a general caveat.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think as a general caveat, I would be more comfortable. I don't want to, what I would be hesitant about is to actually say, if you hear anything about this, because then you kind of almost incentivize them a little bit to actually do ask some questions, and I'd be reluctant for that to happen. But a general caveat of, if anything that comes up that is not within scope, you think that's pertinent to the CC&SO, please report back directly, not through the official reports, but maybe during the calls or on list communications, etc. If that makes sense. Very good. The second part of the document is the selection criteria. These are criteria that are used to kind of find the ideal or the best possible candidate. They're obviously published as part of the RFP, the request for proposal, to find the independent examiner. Again, I'm not going through all of these. Obviously, it's quite extensive. As a general note, these are obviously adapted to the CCNSO, but they're essentially selection criteria that are being used, comparable to these for all or have been used for other organizational reviews. Also, the Organizational Effectiveness Committee of the ICANN Board, the OEC, provided general input about this selection criteria, not about these specifically yet on the CCNSO, but generally what they would like to see within these. And I'm going to defer to Debbie again, who actually raised two very good points. The first, and I'm going to paraphrase, is that she would like to see pointed out that anybody who applies is aware of the time zone differences and be flexible with regard to that and be able to cover the different time zones. And I think that there's great feedback, and we will certainly take that on board and add that to the selection criteria, I think especially with the CCNSO and especially this group with people based in a wide variety of time zones. That's very important. So thank you for that, Debbie. The other issue she raises is that she notes that the criteria ask for a basic knowledge of ICANN, and I'm going to read on. But given this is to be an independent review, I would like to see a bit more than that demonstrated, as they need to show they are aware of the scope of stakeholders they need to capture and the views of being without guided, of without being guided. And I think they need a bit more than basic knowledge to capture that. So I agree, or we would agree to that, and we would also disagree with that. And this is always the magic circle that the procurement process attempts to square. On the one hand side, you want somebody who knows ICANN as well as possible, obviously. So they have a prior knowledge, they can hit the ground running, they understand the role of, in this case, the CCNSO, how they fit within the wider structures, what their roles and responsibilities are, and ideally even have some historical knowledge. On the other hand, you want to find somebody who's truly independent, who has no preconceived ideas about, in this case, the CCNSO, who has no preconceived ideas about what ICANN does well and doesn't do too well. And so that's then where the knowledge comes in. If you want to have someone who's truly independent, ideally they have no knowledge and come in kind of blank, right? And find out themselves how things work. That's maybe the best way to suggest improvement. On the other hand, obviously, as I said, you want somebody who knows ICANN and has contextual knowledge. And so that's why we put in the basic knowledge, because we are we're trying to square that circle when we find the ideal candidate, and we're kind of reluctant to quote unquote scare applicants off because they feel they don't have in-depth knowledge or the kind of level of knowledge that is kind of seems to be suggested by the RFP. It is something that the OEC is also keenly aware of, and we as staff are as well, of this conundrum. And for that reason, I would be the term basic has worked well for us in the past. I think we've kind of to our best capabilities, we have managed to find independent examiners who know enough about the organizational review to conduct the review, and who are independent enough to bring in outside opinions and new and impartial views to conduct this effectively. So I would be disinclined to kind of change the wording here for that reason. Does anybody have any comments or concerns about that? And I'd be happy, by the way, also to respond if you think that's appropriate. I'm not sure whether Debbie is going to be listening to the call, but I'd be happy to respond on Liz to her to share that, just share that feedback. All right, very good. With that, my part of the presentation is over. I took a bit more time than I thought. I apologize for that. And I pass it on back to Jennifer to talk you through to the rest of the PowerPoint presentation. Angie, if you could pull that up. And Jennifer, back over to you. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, Larry. Let's just wait a couple of seconds until the slide deck comes up.
You should have it now, Jennifer.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Okay, so as you can see, this is an estimated timeline of deliverables and activities, and I'd like to emphasize the word estimated there. I think it's important to point out that throughout the process, there's an emphasis on quality rather than timing. Obviously, we want to have a timeline that we try hard to adhere to, but I think we just keep in mind that the process is flexible throughout, as we stress in the scope document, based on community needs. So at each point in the process, obviously, we'll consider consider the timing. So as we have already discussed, the review should start no later than the 31st of August. Hopefully, if we publish our RFP in late April or early May, we'll be on track there. The next bubble you can see is orange, and it has a red highlight around it. That's because this is an important time for the review working party and the CCNSO. And you can see there's three points in this timeline where the review working party's input is particularly required. So the draft assessment report, as I mentioned, in Puerto Rico, we're using the two-phase process now, which is fairly new. We've been using it for the RSAC and SAC reviews that are ongoing, and also the NOMCOM, but it's slightly different from old reviews in that the assessment report is delivered to the review working party first. That is, you will get a preview of it before it's published for the public consultation period. The assessment report does not contain any recommendations. It is simply the findings. And there's a public consultation period. And at this stage, prior to the public consultation period, the review working party is there to correct, as I mentioned before, any areas where you think there's the independent examiner has missed the mark in terms of has made factually incorrect assessment. So we just want to emphasize that there. But that will happen, and then there's a period in time, if necessary, for the independent examiner to make any adjustments to the assessment report before it is published for public consultation. I want to quickly emphasize the difference between public consultation and public comment period. It's not the public consultation is not the official, process that you all may be used to in terms of publishing for the 40-day period. It's a little bit more informal. There will be a webinar. The independent examiner will host a webinar at this point, and public comments from the community will be encouraged through the mailing list and also through that webinar. There will not be a public comment period, as you may be familiar with from previous work within ICANN. After that public consultation period, the independent examiner will provide the recommendations to the review working party. So again, at this stage, it's a preview for the review working party ahead of these being published to the wider community. So at this point, again, the review working party will have the opportunity to provide any inputs to the recommendations, and there'll be a time period for adjustment before the draft final report is published for public comment. Of course, the CCNSO is welcome to, you know, submit a formal public comment during that time period, but the preview period is really there to make any major adjustments that need to happen at that stage. Then the final report is issued following the process that you're all familiar with. The estimated timeline for that is July 2019, at which point that's when the review work ends for the independent examiner. After that, the review working party looks at the final report and produces a feasibility assessment, which is an assessment of the feasibility of implementation of the recommendations. So that will be based on, you know, usability, prioritization, budget, etc. How feasible are the recommendations? So the review working party will produce a report, and that gets submitted to the board along with the final report from the independent examiner. And you'll see there it says July to December 2019. It's just, again, this is an estimated timeline. In previous experience, it's taken about 6 months for this feasibility assessment to be produced. However, if more time is required, then more time is required. But we put in here 6 months just as a sort of guideline. Then the board makes a decision. So they'll approve or not approve each of the recommendations. So in doing that, they'll consider both the final report, which comes from the independent examiner, and the feasibility assessment, which comes from the review working party. I just put board meeting in there at the time. Now, obviously, that will depend on the timing of the feasibility assessment delivery and other things. If you could just scroll down slightly, Angie, to where we can see, just to quickly highlight each of the ICAM meetings, the independent examiner will have some kind of expected activity. And again, the activity may depend on how the timing of the review is progressing. We've estimated the activity that we think is probably going to be appropriate at the time based on our estimated timeline. However, this might change. And this is, you know, this is the independent examiner. They will be hosting community sessions at these meetings. Obviously, the review working party is encouraged to attend. But these are expected activities of the independent examiner. I'm conscious I kind of went through that slide pretty quickly, but I'm going to open it up now if anybody has any questions or comments about this timeline or any of the expected deliverables from the review working party. Okay, and I do want to emphasize as well that and I think Larissa mentioned this in Puerto Rico, that if the CCNSO has any big projects that you all are working on or deliverables that outside of the review that we should be aware of, that MSSI should be aware of, please feel free to share that information with us as early as you can, so that we're able to factor in your workload as well into this timeline here. Okay. And one more thing I should mention, that the independent examiner is expected to host two webinars, one after the assessment report is published and one after the draft final report is published for public comment. And again, that's an independent examiner deliverable. Okay. Seeing no hands raised, and please feel free to speak up if you don't know how to raise your hand. I guess let's move on to the next slide. Great. Great. And I do just want to mention Hong in the comment section has asked, should the IE be an organization or an individual? It's generally, Angie has responded, it's generally an organization. In previous experience, it has not been an individual, rather a team. Okay, so next steps then. So we would ask the review working party to finalize your initial input to the scope document by the 16th of April. This, you may notice, is one day earlier than that I mentioned in my email, and the reason being that the OEC actually has a meeting on the 17th, and it would be helpful to get your initial input by the end of the day UTC on the 16th of April so that we can obviously incorporate that in presenting the scope and selection criteria to the OEC. So we'd encourage any comments outside of this conversation that we've had today, please share them on the email list. Then once the OEC has approved the, and I guess before I move on again, I'll just emphasize timing. It's important that the quality, prevails. So just keep that in mind. But we would ask for your initial input by the 16th of April. Then we'll finalize the RFP with the OEC and get the RFP published. And as I mentioned before, we'll provide the review working party with updates throughout that process. One thing that we would ask you all to consider is a primary contact or two or three that we can work with outside of, the wider review working party group. It's just helpful for us to have one or two people that we can go to directly for questions about logistics and things like that. So please keep that in mind, and maybe you can share that information with us or with the policy in the coming days or weeks. We would then also ask you to agree on a regular call slot. At this point, we don't need to do that because, as Bart highlighted earlier, the real kind of meat of the work is going to begin in August. So we can touch base in July, maybe, and figure out a regular call slot. It might work to have a meeting once every couple of weeks initially and see how that goes. But, we can figure that out further down the line. And then in August, the kickoff call will happen with the independent examiner once they have come on board.
Hi, Jennifer. We have a raised hand from Bart.
Yeah, thank you, Jennifer. Let me rephrase the question I had before and now look at the period post-August, so starting in August, leading up to how long it takes. What is the, say, your experience about the number or, say, how often does the working party will need to meet with the independent examiner, say, on average? What's your experience? Say, are we talking about twice a month? Are we talking every 2 weeks? Are we talking once a week? What's the what's your experience in that realm? So people do have an understanding, because this is a pretty large group. And around that time, it's another 4 or 5 months ahead. So they may want to know what they're signed up to.
Thank you. So, and my colleagues with more experience may want to jump in, but how we find it works with other review teams or review working parties is that we put on the calendar a one-hour time slot every 2 weeks. So it's there. There are some points in the review where that call is not necessary. For example, when the independent examiner is working on consolidating input from the community and putting into a draft report. However, it's nice to have that time on everybody's schedule so that it's there and it can always be cancelled if necessary. Then there are other points in the review where we may want to have more than one call every 2 weeks if if, for example, you know, the assessment report is published or shared with the review working party, and there's lots of input and lots of the review working party feels that there's lots that needs to be edited and shared, lots of discussion between the IE and the review working party and MSSI. So I guess the expectation is a 1 hour call every couple of weeks, but that may peak and trough at various times throughout the review process.
Yeah, and people should expect say some documents to be shared as well. So it's around 3 hours every two weeks on average. So it's starting sometime in August.
Yeah, and if I can add to that, Bart, so I think the emphasis should be on average, especially in the beginning. It's probably considerably less than that. And then when the draft report comes out, the draft assessment report and the draft final report, it'd probably be more than that. I would suspect, depending on how fast people read and how much feedback there'd be, I would probably estimate more close to 5 or maybe even 6 hours in those couple of weeks. But there will be longer periods where there'll probably be not even an hour per week, maybe no work at all for the reworking party, simply because the independent examiner will be, you know, reviewing documents, conducting interviews, and then once they share with the RWP, with the reworking party, what the outcome is, there may be a follow-up call, there might be some feedback.
I just wanted to
make sure exactly that the 3 hours will not be consistent. It'll really be quite more at some point, and then maybe nothing at all during other errands. Thanks, Bill.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. So we have only a couple of minutes left. That's the end of the presentation in terms of slides, but please feel free to jump in with any final questions or comments before we wrap up.
This is me again.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
What would be the most efficient and effective way for you to receive your feedback on the, if any, on the scope document? Would, should people write and say respond to the email list, or should they write to you directly, or should we collate them, or how do you want to move forward on that one? Because that's probably the next deadline is, I don't know whether the 16th is a feasible date, but at least do it in a week's time. So please, indicate what it would be your preference to receive the feedback.
Yeah, I think if people could share their feedback on the list, that would be helpful, because then others can see, everybody can see everybody else's input. So I'd encourage people to share their comments on the list, and then we can consolidate everybody's comments and share the clean document.
And what's the end date for this? Well, what is the timeline you had in mind? Is it the 16th, or is it the next 2 days?
Yeah.
Or do people have a week from now?
I think if people can share initial inputs by the 16th, I think that would be really helpful on list.
Can I just add to that, Jennifer? This is Lars. Sorry. Because of the OEC needing to sign up on that, and the OEC doesn't meet particularly. You know, they meet usually once a month, and sometimes a little bit more sporadically than that. So ideally, we would have your full feedback by the 16th. So we were hoping for some initial feedback today, and then any concerns raised by the 16th, so we can take it to the OEC and potentially get a sign-off and get the RFP published. But as Jennifer said, if the more time is needed, we'll accommodate that. So what I would ask to the RWP about is that if people think they cannot provide feedback by the 16th, to let us know that as soon as possible, and to make a suggestion by when that can be done, because we will then have to look at either having the OEC agree on this on list or even pushing this out further, which will obviously then delay the launch of the RFP. And we will adjust the timeline, it's fine, but ideally we would really, it would be helpful to us to have the all feedback concluded by close of business of the 16th of April.
That means that, say, by the 16th, you will, if there is any feedback, you will have updated the document, or does it mean post-16th you will update?
So we would update the document at the end of the day of the 16th or very early on the 17th for the OEC to present. This is assuming that the feedback, you know, the scope is going to be signed off not by us, by MSSI. The scope is going to be signed off by the OEC. So yeah, we would just update the document with what the RWP says, present that to the OEC. There's no filtering on our side. And then put that to the OEC. And if they give the thumbs up, we move forward. If they give the thumbs down, then we will communicate, obviously, with the RWP to find a compromise moving forward.
Okay. Thank you.
And so I suggest, I mean, I know we're over the hour. I suggest that, as I said, we will on the 16th, maybe in the morning, and by that I mean maybe 1500 hours UTC time, we will send a quick note to the list to kind of summarize any feedback we've received, and then ask probably officially whether people are kind of done with providing feedback, or whether actually more time is needed, and then we'll communicate from there on out, if that makes sense. So if people could watch their emails on the 16th to at the very least say whether they are done or not done, that would be helpful. Thanks. And that's really all. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much for joining the call. And with that, let's close the call, and I'll talk to you all soon. Thanks. Bye.
Bye bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks, everyone.